You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live. Next, featuring intimate and in-depth interviews with Black Hollywood's next edition of stars and influencers. Black Hollywood Live. Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live, next.
Welcome, 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 welcome to another edition of Black Hollywood Live Next. You hear this music jamming in the background. We got a little J. Cole for you this Friday. Yes, I'm your host, Megan Thomas. You can catch me on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Meg Scoop. And who are you, lady?
Hello, you guys. It's Courtney Tezno. You guys can keep in touch with me at Tezno's on Twitter and Instagram.
And be sure to use the hashtag BHL Next if you have any questions or comments for our guest today. And you know we keeps it hot like fire. Every Friday we have a guest on here that somebody you need to know, and this week is no exception. You've seen him on CW's iZombie every Tuesday 9, 8 Central. It's the one and only Detective Clive Batho. Give it up for Malcolm Goodwin!
Thank you guys for having me. Love the intro music. Love it.
Yes, you are like pumped and ready to go.
That's my pre-audition music when I'm in the gym boxing.
Really?
When I want to go an extra round, go hard, I'll put that on. And when I want to go out to the club right before leaving the house, I play that.
So the pre-turn up, we get
it's
it.
It's the pre-turn up.
Okay, I'm glad you shared that. Now I can use it. Okay. I can use it. Well, let's start talking about what's next and what's hot right now in the world. Let's do a little casting news, okay?
All right.
So, you know, there was a little, you know, Empire is a really big hit show on Fox, and there was a little controversy because Monique said that she was offered the role of Cookie.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody's like, no, you weren't. Lee Daniels
Prove
said, no,
it.
You weren't. Danny Strong, which is Lee Daniels' writing partner, said, no, you weren't offered the part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, she has now come out with proof. So she was on Sway in the Morning, and she produced the emails where they offered her the job of Cookie.
Wow.
And then she also showed the emails where they said, oops, our bad, because we didn't realize, I guess it's being Lee Daniels' first TV show. He didn't realize he had to go through the networks and the executives for final say on who gets cast.
Yeah.
So the second email was like, oops, our bad, never mind. You know, Lee fought for you, but sorry.
Yeah, it was an uptone. Yeah, it was, he didn't know the network had to get involved.
Right, right.
So she was offering you. Wow.
Right.
Okay.
So
she's telling the truth.
Exactly. So I felt bad for her because this whole time, you know, everybody's like, oh, she's... We even heard that Lee Daniels said that she was blackballed from the industry. That's why we haven't seen Monique for
a
while.
No.
Yeah.
And so it kind of looks bad on him now that she's produced the emails like, hey, you sent an email, proof, February of 2014, that I am supposed to be Cookie. You're asking me for quote rates.
Yeah.
Like, what's my quote? All that
and
stuff.
It sounds like he caught a bit of amnesia there.
Yeah, or probably just there's a bit miscommunication in terms of he's probably talking about like an official offer from the network versus this, you know, personal offer that he gave through email, which he didn't know was protocol. So it's kind of like neither one of them was necessarily lying about it.
Right.
But,
yeah, right.
But yeah, an offer is an offer depending on, you know, how you see it. Yeah.
That's
it's a little different.
Rough.
It's a miscommunication.
Do you think, I'm trying to think, like, would I like Empire with her as Cookie?
I don't know if I would.
I like it really as
I think Taraji was a great pick. I mean, Terrence Howard and her are wonderful together. So.
Yeah, right. They're incredible.
Yeah.
And it happened the way it was supposed to
exactly.
happen. I mean, just what Empire is doing is just incredible. I mean, just the television history is made, and I'm a big fan of Taraji, Terrence, and all those guys on that show, so, you know, big congrats to them.
Yeah, right. And then we're not knocking Monique at all. She definitely could be put for a different series that's coming out.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I think she still
looks
great.
I think a friend on the show.
Yeah, Monique's incredible. She'll be fine.
Make a cameo,
she's
girl.
She's so incredible. She'll be fine.
Right, right.
Yeah.
To see her in something. I ain't seen her well. Girl,
I know.
Come back.
Yeah.
Come back.
Please, Monique.
All right. Let's talk about some music. What's hot?
All right. So we have there was a leak, actually. Rihanna and Chris Brown have a new song together, and people are saying, oh, they're back together. It's a song called Put It Up, and it's kind of raunchy. So let's listen to this real quick.
Ooh, okay.
Let's hope we get to the raunchy part.
I haven't heard this.
Just leaked. Whenever they're ready, we're going to get it. But yeah, so basically... So
it's like,
kind
of
there's yeah, it's really hot. So there's a lot of like raunchy lyrics, and I'm gonna let you guys listen to it before I tell you the rest of why it's so hot and why it's like bringing all this buzz. That oh my gosh, they're back together.
I'm just just gonna take you from here, girl. Let's fly away.
All right. Whoa. Hold on. Is that Chris Brown singing?
No.
That's him talking. He said, girl, let me take you for a ride.
Oh, I think the version we have is he sounded a little lower than he would. But I'm going to read you some of these lyrics, you guys. Okay, so one that Rihanna says is, baby, you don't need to be scared of me. I guarantee that I'm not a mistake. I'm going to give you all my love, and I hope that you won't misplace it. You created this ish, going insane with all this fear. Can't turn my back on it. I'm in love, gotta face it. So that was her lyrics, basically. They're kind of giving us a little bit of their inside as far as their relationship. But what I want to go ahead and say for everybody saying, oh my God, they're back together. He just dumped Karrueche. He has a baby. What's going on, you guys?
Messy.
Yeah, no. So before Chris Brown actually put out his X album, they recorded this. They just did not release it on this one because he didn't get cleared from Rihanna. So this is pre any of that drama. So there's
Does that
no
make
cheating.
It any better?
I don't know if it makes it any better on Karrueche's hand, but for everyone thinking like, oh my gosh, they're back together. This was before it all happened. And some, y'all, I'm gonna let y'all go look up Chris Brown's lyrics because I'm not about to read some of the raunchy things he said. But yeah, it's just basically what he would do to Rihanna or what he's done to Rihanna. Mm-hmm. And,
oh my gosh.
It just leaked. So that's the new fresh beat.
I don't know. Would you guys be okay with them getting back together?
I have no comment.
I mean, to each his own. I mean, I don't know either one of them. I know they're incredible artists. So, it's up to them. Exactly. You know, only they know what's going on with each other and what the real thing is.
I think it's too much messiness.
It's really
too much. Too much drama in their lives.
I think Chris needs to focus on taking care of his daughter because that's what's most important right now. Figure out the relationship stuff later because all these tabloids, I don't think his daughter needs to be in any of that. So just... Yeah. Be a good daddy, Chris.
Right. Well, let's talk about you a little bit, Malcolm.
All righty.
Yeah. Let's go back to your history.
Yeah, let's take it way back.
Yeah, all the way back.
Okay, so you were raised in New York, and that's huge in entertainment. Everybody wants to go to New York. What was it like being raised there, and did you always know you wanted to be an actor?
I grew up in Brooklyn, New York.
What part of Brooklyn?
Crown Heights.
Okay.
Crown Heights, 372 St. John's Place. We always got to say the entire address between Washington and Underhill. I didn't know I wanted to be an actor growing up. I mean, I wanted to be a baseball player. I wanted to be a scientist. I used to enter all these science fairs, and I played baseball hardcore. And I was never good. I'll keep it real.
What is your position? I was shortstop. That's softball, but I was shortstop.
They had me. I played first base, and I played any of the outfield positions, and also catcher.
Okay.
And I was more, but yeah. I was never really that good.
At least you're honest.
Yeah. And then it kind of clicked to me. It just, I think in high school, that's when I just kind of gave it up and decided to focus on acting. But acting happened, you know, by mistake, but probably by fate. You know, I grew up with a bad speech problem. I stuttered. I stammered. And was all over the place. But the only time I was clear and articulate was when I would read material, when I would read something, and everyone would say, you sound so different when you're reading material versus the way you talk. I can talk 1,000 miles per hour if I wanted to. So I had to learn how to slow myself down and pace myself. And so I felt comfortable talking, doing events. I was always a narrator or a host or something like that. And I felt comfortable in that position. And so I said, maybe when I grow up, I'll also narrate when I'm not doing the science thing. Mm-hmm. And they said, actually, what you're doing is acting. You know, and that's when I applied.
Did a teacher tell you this?
Yeah, a teacher told me that. Yeah, they said this is acting. You're acting. You're it's make believe. So maybe you want to look into it. So I went to junior high school for theater in Brooklyn. I went to high school for theater in Manhattan, and I went to college for theater. And and it's been it's been an incredible journey. I had no idea I would. Be where I'm at right now. I just did it for the love and for the fun of it.
Awesome. Wait, what kind of science projects did you have?
I mean, volcanoes. I did all kinds. And vortexes. I used to do all these crazy things.
I didn't get to that level of vortexes.
Yeah. So it was... But yeah, it's, it feels like another lifetime, but that's mm-hmm. what I wanted to do.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, you're doing great at what you do now. So who inspired you? Who were your role models?
My teachers, you know, I was really inspired by my teacher. You know, I grew up, you know, neighborhood was rough, but in school was a safe haven. And it was really my peers. You know, I looked up to a lot of people, you know, my contemporaries and things like that. And I mean, I remember looking up to Puff Daddy. I'm like, I'm looking up to him. He's doing it, you know, because I can relate to him. He's from Harlem, and you know, because I also grew up in Harlem. I always say I'm from Brooklyn and Harlem, because I moved to Harlem when I was 12, and so, but yeah, I looked up to, you know, actors. You know, Denzel Washington. I grew up watching everything that he's done, on Sidney Poitier, but mainly it was probably people I can touch and feel. I needed to experience and feel your energy. So it was a lot of teachers growing up, a lot of my theater teachers I looked up to.
And also, since you're a New York dude, who's your favorite rapper? It's got to be a New York guy.
My favorite rapper from New York, you know, my favorite rapper growing up, you know, was Kool G Rap. And everybody always like, hi, you just don't seem like a Kool G Rap dude.
I would have guessed that.
It was my Live and Let Die was like my first tape I had, you know. And I listened to that tape nonstop.
Oh my goodness, we all.
Like my first introduction to like hip hop, and so Kool G Rap is always at a certain level because I grew up with that, you know. And Big L, you know, I went to school with Big L, so I was a big Al fan because we went to the same high school. Then Nas, you know, Nas, I was a big I'm a big Nas fan, and you know, everybody at that time thought they had a, you know, 16, thought they could spit, you know, everybody had a quick 16. We all did, we all had it. And I remember when Illmatic came out, and I'm just like, I just retired. I can't do it. I give it up. But yeah, and obviously Jay-Z and Biggie.
Okay, so out of the three, Jay-Z, Biggie, Nas, who's the best? Who's your pick? You got to pick one.
If I had to pick one, I'll pick Jay-Z. I mean, just because of his body of work. It would be Jay-Z.
Definitely. Yeah. And then you really consider yourself like quiet and reserved. What did you learn from Julia Richmond in New York? What brought out that performer in you?
You know, I think, you know, probably not being able to really express myself in life. When it was time to, I put all that, everything that I was bottling up into a character, and I just went for it, and just to see that people respond to that and react to that was incredible. And in life, they're like, you never talk. I'm going, you don't say that. But then on stage, I'm like this big personality, this big character, and just going for it. Mm-hmm. And obviously, I got past that part where I finally heard myself and was able to make the corrections and talking. I'm like, I've been sounding like that for all that time, and I didn't hear myself. For me, it sounded the same way.
Right.
But finally, it clicked, and I was able to change it like that and started to, you know, come out my shell, you know, on a personal level, and letting those things that I let out on stage show themselves in life.
Definitely.
And what is Julia Richmond for those who don't know?
Yeah, it's actually called Talent Unlimited High School now.
Okay.
Yeah, and when I was there, there was a small program. It was a small program within Julia Richmond called Talent Unlimited. We called it TU. And when I went there, one of my inspirations, actually one of my big inspirations, was Mos Def. Before he was Mos Def, was Dante. He was an actor. He was in the Cosby Mysteries. He was in the Red Fox Show. So we knew him as an actor. And he actually helped me get my first manager. You know, his manager became my first manager. And I wasn't even really serious about the acting thing like that. It was just something just for fun. I didn't think, you know, you can make money from anything. I didn't think that. I just did it because I enjoyed being on stage and performing with my friends. But Mos Def was definitely a big inspiration for me. It's funny calling him Mos because it's Dante. But he was a big inspiration with me coming out being a young actor. He also taught me how to swim.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, he was on a swim team, and I was on a swim team.
What? Y'all like two of the few black people who swim.
I was just saying that.
Exactly. People say black people can't swim, so that was a main thing. I think it was Mr. Zarensky that was a swim coach, and I was just like, I'm going to break that stereotype.
Right,
I'm going to learn how to swim.
Yes, you learn your survival skills. Yeah, I love
that. Mos could swim.
Wow.
He could swim. A lot of people don't know that.
Especially in New York. I would think like New Yorkers don't really swim because unless you go to like the pools the in coast. The summer because it's cold most of the year. Like it's cold, you know. Like
oh yeah, and that's I mean yeah. I mean in Harlem it was like Jackie Robinson Park and that pool everything is only 3 feet, so you can really you can't swim.
Do anything.
You can't really get it in 3 feet. You
might
can't even
scrape
dive
your knee.
In 3 feet.
Might scrape
exactly.
Knee
yeah.
Yes.
So but this school, Julia Richmond, randomly had a swim program.
Right.
They had a swim program, and I saw it as an opportunity to learn how to swim, and I went for it. And,
that's dope.
And I'm okay. I wasn't really great. I never won a race. Not one.
Never. It's okay.
So I suck at swimming, and I suck at baseball.
Okay.
But it's
okay.
Right.
Acting worked out. Everything seemed to work out on the acting
right,
front.
Right,
so,
right.
So let me stick with that.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And then let's take it back to high school. What would your classmates say about you? Like, what was your stereotype in school? Were you a nerd? Were you a jock? Were you any of those things?
I was probably just a theater geek, but we wasn't considered geeks like that because everybody was all from the block, you know. It was a bunch of hood cats doing Shakespeare,
uh-huh.
You know, and you know, even at chorus, it was all a bunch of hood cats, you know, singing at the my boys, you know, was in chorus. They'll, you know, go to the White House, going to, you know, sung at the White House, then come back and we get in and crack it on the block, you know,
right.
And so But yeah, I was just a theater nerd, you know, but not nerd in that sense because we were still
you
cool.
Still
we still had swag.
So everybody at your school was pretty
that.
Cool.
Yeah, everybody was real cool, and then I started writing, playwriting, and producing plays and stuff. So I kind of, you know, created my name in high school as in terms of being like an entrepreneur,
mm-hmm.
and creating my own material and stuff for my friends to be in.
And then besides acting, what other jobs did you have? Like, did you have any weird jobs before you started doing this?
You know, I tell people I had 57 9-to-5 jobs before, 57. Yeah, 57. And I didn't know it was, I think I got the list in my pocket on a
Are
notepad.
You serious?
Yeah,
wow.
I had to do this Facebook poll and it was like, how many jobs did you have? And so I just kind of went down a list. You know, I started working when, you know, I was 11 years old, you know, bagging groceries mm-hmm. at the supermarket. And I don't know, growing up, and at that point, I was living in Harlem, so we just had a, you know, always wanted to have money in your pocket, so I always just found a 9-to-5 job, even like the summer school, the summer jobs, I forget mm-hmm. what they were called, but I did that every year, and I always managed two, three jobs all the time.
Wow.
Yeah, and I didn't know it was 57. It was just to survive.
What's the craziest one that you've had?
The craziest job I had? The craziest job I had was probably wrapping lumber.
Wait, what?
Yeah,
what
the, random.
What is that?
Oh man, yeah. I hope this is a lot of my stories turn real dark without me even knowing.
Oh,
my castmates at iZombie could tell you. They said Malcolm will start a story that sounds so pleasant and funny. All of a sudden, it takes a weird turn to become dark. So I hope this one doesn't do it. But no, I was. I think it will. Oh no, it does. I was working at this. I was working at this burrito place, and the manager at that job, she had her dad had like this lumber shop in Jersey. You had to take the PATH train, and you had to wrap bundles of lumber for firewood, and every bundle you wrap, you get a dollar. And I'm thinking, how hard can that be? You know, just take the plastic wrap it around. So I will go to Jersey on weekends, and it's a bad story. It does end up.
You gotta get it out.
But it's I would go there and wrap the lumber, and it took a long time to wrap one bundle. Like
right.
One bundle took like sometimes like 30, 45 minutes because you had to find the right pieces of wood to put together because it was all chopped up sloppy. And but we came out with a system. Me and my three friends where we were just like we have to do this as a collective, not
right,
one at a time.
Right.
We have to teamwork mm-hmm. this, and then
we ain't making no money.
We're not making any money. So if we do 60, everybody's making $20 each. You know, so we average maybe about 60 bundles a day.
Wow.
And had to split $60, you know,
wow.
And it was all this work for $20. But
wow.
We really, really wanted that $20, and I think. It was payday, and I was calling the woman, and that's a terrible story. I feel so bad. I was calling the woman, and you know, I forget her name, and I was calling her, and for this $20, and I'm like, how come she ain't picking up her phone? And it turned out she got in a car accident.
Oh, no!
Yeah, and she died. And, of course, it turns dark. Of course, that's one of my stories.
Okay, that one turned dark.
Yeah, it turned dark.
Did you get your $20, though?
No, I didn't get it. But I felt bad for thinking. I'm like, I guess I'm not going
to
get that $20.
Issue, that's okay. You don't have
to
do that.
Like, yeah. I guess I'm not going to get that $20.
Someone has to get it.
So that was the end of that job.
So basically, that's the day you volunteered. That is hilarious.
Yeah. I got some weird ones. I got some dark ones.
I believe you do. That's probably why they picked you for iZombie.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think maybe the genre just inspired a lot of, because my cast base could tell you. They're like, listen, it will take a turn. There's some crazy stories. So, yeah.
Well, maybe that prepared you for this, because you needed that as inspiration.
Oh, exactly. Right. Exactly.
You said you went to college, right?
Yeah.
What school did you go to?
I went to SUNY Purchase College.
And you said you studied theater there?
Yeah.
Is that when it solidified for you, like, okay, I'm going to make a living as an actor doing this?
Yeah, it was because I took a lot of time off. I took 6 years off after I graduated from high school. And, I got into, NYU for filmmaking for the first year. I got into a few colleges, but I didn't take it. And because I wasn't really serious about it at that time, I'll be honest. I was more serious about the writing side, and acting was just a fun thing. That's all it was. Within that 6 years, I did some commercials here and there. I just go out on random auditions. But what happened is I would go on these open calls on these Backstage magazine. And whenever I was like upset or like, I would just go into the magazine and audition for something. Mm-hmm. And I think four out of the five things I've auditioned for over that 5 years, I booked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then the biggest one being this movie called Color of Justice, mm-hmm. with Gregory Hines, F. Murray Abraham, Judd Hirsch, Dulé Hill, Eugene Bird. And next, I'm in Canada, and it was just so weird, because I'm like, at that point, I didn't travel. I didn't see the world. I'm just a dude straight from the block.
Right,
and I'm like,
I'm
thinking that they're fooling me anyway, so I do that movie. It was a great experience. But I decided, all right, well, I'm giving this maybe 25% of my time, and it's working out. What happens if I give it 100%?
Right.
What happens if I go all in with this acting thing? And I said, all right, fine. I applied to one school. I said, if I get into this one school, they audition, I don't know, anywhere from 7,500 plus students, and they only accept 24.
Wow.
And I said, if I'm one of the 24, I will give 100% to this. Mm-hmm. And I went to that audition. I had a dusty monologue that I hadn't done since high school at that time. And it was the best I've ever done that monologue, with that 6 years of life on my own before going to college, and that struggling with that, all that experience. And I did that monologue, and then I found out literally like maybe 3 days later, I was one of the 24 that got in.
So crazy.
And so it was, and so I kept my word. I was like, I'm all in. And that's when it started, that's when everything kind of started in terms of a career, and
when did you decide to move to LA?
I moved to LA in 2006. Mm-hmm. In 2006. And it was after I graduated. I graduated college in 2003. So I did the Law and Orders. I did all the New York shows. And I was kind of burnt out with theater, because we did so much theater in college. Mm-hmm. And I also did a lot of theater. Believe it or not, in that 6 year, I did six year period, I auditioned for like this off Broadway show at the Manhattan Theater Club and booked it. And so I got to perform, on a professional level.
Uh-huh.
In 06, I just wanted to, I don't know, I wanted more opportunity. And LA was that. Everyone's telling me, it's more opportunity. You did this, that, and the third in New York. Now it's time to make the move to LA. Uh-huh. So I said, all right, I'm going to give it 6 months. We'll see what happens. And then in the first 3 months, I got American Gangster.
Yeah. Let's talk about this. So you played Jimmy Z.
Yeah.
And American Gangster. What was it like when you're like, oh my goodness, I get this movie and it's Denzel is in it? How did you feel?
You know what? That was an incredible experience, because when I got that job, when I got the American Gangster job, I actually got that off of tape.
Wow.
Yeah. And so I put a tape together. filmed it, and it was a crazy story to get it to casting. It was an adventure. Two of my great friends, they came through in a clutch, and because I had to get it to New York, so I had to upload the file to the internet. My boy had to download it, burn it on a DVD. And then he had to go to work, so he had to pass it off to one of my other boys, you know.
Wait for it to finish rendering.
Yeah, and then he had to go to the job, pick the DVD up, and then drop it off.
It was teamwork,
yeah, and then drop it off to my manager, who then got it to the casting agent, and then and then next thing you know, it's okay, you're one of 25. Cool.
Oh, my goodness.
You're in the mix. You're okay, you're one of 20. You're one of 15. Oh. You're one of 10. You're one of 5.
You're the one.
Next thing you know, you're the one.
Wow.
And then when I went to shoot American Gangster, it was really to my knowledge, just one scene. It was just the what turned out to be the piano scene.
Right.
It was just for that one scene. Next thing you know, there's these other scenes, and they're like, "Oh, you're going to be the snitch." And I had one week worth of work turned to 3 months of work.
Yes.
Yeah, and I'm like, amazing. and I'm working with Denzel, Russell Crowe, Yul Vasquez, you know, Ruby Dee, all these great people, and it was just a common T.I., great people, and I was a sponge, you know, I'm going to be a sponge, and you know, just learn as much as I can from these people I respect so much, and it kind of just. For me, seeing, you know, holding them in such high regard, it kind of, for lack of a better expression, it brung the entire experience down to earth.
Right.
You know, because it was here before.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, wait a minute, these are people, you know, flesh and blood, regular people.
Yeah.
You know, and they're just, I don't know. And then I'm like, I think there's a place for me here in this business. So it just gave me a lot of confidence to keep the pedal to the metal and keep pushing forward.
Oh, so first you're like, Mama, we made it. And then you're like, okay, well, let me get to this for real.
Yeah, exactly.
And then in 2011, you landed your first, I guess, series regular role in A&E's Breakout Kings.
Yeah.
With Lazo. I love that show.
Oh, thanks.
And I'm so mad it's not on air anymore. But you did really, really well. And
yeah, thanks.
I think that was, even though I saw you in American Gangster, that was the first time I was like, yo, this dude can act. You did good, but I was like, I watch him for real. Like, he's cool. What was it like to be a series regular for the first time?
Oh, I mean, it was a dream come true. And I say that a lot because there's things that I've experienced that I didn't know was a dream until it happened, you know, and, but yeah, that was my first, that was my first pilot season too. It was one of those things where, I came out here in 2006 for pilot season, but I always had a movie because after American Gangster, things just went nonstop. It was always films, American Gangster, Leatherheads, America at St. Anna, and it just kind of, it kept on going. And I wanted to get on TV so bad, and I mean, well, at least try for pilot season. So finally this year is free, and I book it. And, I mean, it's just to work and play a character on a 13-episode arc and to be part of that production family, you know, with Laz, Sarinda, Dom, Brooke, Jimmy. It was, it was great. I mean, as cliche as it may sound, it was definitely a dream come true, and I learned a lot from these people. You know, Laz and Dom, these guys were like big brothers to me, you know, just available, and Jimmy, just great friendships all around, so it was awesome.
Right, and I will say this, if you ever, I'll say this, that show to me should have been picked up for like 4 or 5 more seasons because I could just see where it was going. I was like, oh yeah, I have big dreams for Breakout.
Yeah,
it's
going to
happen next season. Yeah. And then
really
I was like,
developing.
Wait, that's it? Why? Like,
yeah, it happened. It was one of those things where, and also it had a resurgence like during like Netflix.
Right,
like
right.
I feel like more people knew about it once it came out on Netflix. I'm like, oh, what's up, Shay? And they saw it through Netflix, not necessarily when it was on A&E.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, obviously we would have loved for it to continue and move forward, and unfortunately it didn't. But it's great that people are discovering it, like I said, through Netflix and torrents or wherever else they're finding the show from.
Right. And would you rather be on a film or on a TV show?
TV show, you know, Well, there's really no strong preference. I mean, unless you get down to like financials and things, right, but right. you know,
oh, but that aside, you know, yeah. just literally like, okay, I'm coming in to work every day.
Yeah.
But yeah. You really go that much. Yeah.
Like as a quick family, like which one is more preferential to how you live?
Oh, that's a tough one. Cause I love film. I love movies, but you know, right now, because I'm on a TV show, I'm going to say TV. Mm-hmm. And it's also just because of the camaraderie I have with everybody, you know, with Thai Zombie and just the friendships and the family I built with these guys. It's been incredible, you know, versus sometimes when you're in a movie, you don't really get a chance to meet everybody. You know, mm-hmm. American Gangster big cast. I didn't meet everybody. Right. I didn't have time to like I would have loved to chill with Cuba Gooding Jr. I'm such a big fan. Mm-hmm. And he played, but we didn't work the same day.
Right.
Where with a TV show, you're going to work with everyone. You're going to see with everyone. And it's also an opportunity to grow and to progress in your character, like for the detective. For Babineau, Detective Babineau, you know, was his rookie homicide detective, and by the time you see him in episode 12, 13, you go, I remember when he didn't know what he was doing in episode 1. So you have that opportunity to keep building and building and building and building as a character, and obviously it helps as an actor as well. So I would say TV.
Okay. And so since we're talking about iZombie, it's every Tuesday on the CW, yeah. 9/8 Central. Make sure y'all check it out. And I watched it, and I was like, this isn't actually, like, this show is awesome. And the fact that the girl eats the brains, the main character, I forgot her name, help me out.
Liv
eats
more.
The brains with the noodles, and she turns around and she's slurping the noodles, and I'm like, that almost looked good for a second.
Yeah.
Oh,
almost
no.
Looked like
sometimes it looks tasty to me.
Eating the brains.
I wouldn't eat it, but it looked tasty.
We're not eating that.
What is it like to be in this type of genre of film and TV?
It's been incredible. I mean, just the fandom around it, going to the conventions.
Are the fans different for this type of genre? From what you've experienced in the past, from the other shows that you've done?
Well, the only one will break out, but actually there's a lot of Breakout Kings fans, you know, who's a lot of people, I go to the Comic-Con festival, they go, Shay Daniels, Breakout
right,
King.
Right, right, right.
So it kind of goes hand. It's kind of the same. It's a little different in terms of like the cosplay. You know, okay. I didn't even know what cosplay was until I got. There's a lot of things I didn't know until I got started working on iZombie. Like cosplay, I didn't know about people dress up, and that's what the term mm-hmm. is. And also like shipping, I didn't know what was shipping. I'm like FedEx, UPS, and that's people you know combining relationships and the names and things. I had no idea. Yeah.
Wait, what? Shipping. What?
Yeah, like shipping. For example, they like Ravi and Babineau relationship, you combine their names. So it'll be like Ravineau.
Come on, Megan. Like,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Don't feel bad.
I didn't know it was a term for that.
Yeah. The fans always like, make up those names. They combine you
know?
Them.
Yeah, they combine them. No, yeah.
There's a name for that?
Yeah, you got to get on the hashtags, honey.
See, I learned something.
Yeah, yeah. So I had no, I didn't, don't feel bad. Like I said, I didn't. A month and a half ago, I had no idea what that was, you know. But yeah, it's this artist term. So it's fun, you know. Mm-hmm. It's fun. It's also it's a younger audience. It's a nice mix of ages with iZombie too. So it's just been a lot of fun, and a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of love, a lot of support. Yeah, it's been great.
Would you do like a horror movie?
Oh yeah,
like
yeah.
all the way to the dark side.
I'm down to do some horror.
You can
yeah.
tell more of your stories, huh?
Yeah, because I mean, some of my stories are like real life horror stories, so it'll be a perfect match.
Mm-hmm. You've got some really legendary actors, of course Denzel Washington, and now you're in a movie Run All Night with Liam Neeson.
Yeah,
and that's amazing. What was it like? And what was the most challenging part about being in this movie?
I probably would say it's very tedious. Mm-hmm. You know, shooting action sequences are very, very tedious. A lot of pieces, a lot of parts. So it just kind of being available, constantly being on and being available during those breaks and things like that. And also it takes a lot of time. So it's just being patient and present, you know, and just which wasn't a challenge for me, but if anything was, it was also just great to also watch these big action sequences. There was camera rigs I've never seen before.
Really?
I'm like, oh, that's how they do that, you know. so it was also I learned a lot during that in between time. So
did
it was
you
great.
Have to do stunts too?
Yeah, I do some stunts.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. When you when that car is going around, that's me shooting out the car.
No,
yeah.
No. What?
Yeah.
What was? Did you get any injuries? Any bruises?
No
cuts?
Injuries on this one. No.
So Superman on this one.
I was
one.
Good.
Wait,
was
there's
good.
Somebody that's with you, like helping you in the car? Is it just all you?
Yeah, it's also my boy Gavin. He's a drive. Yeah, he's my partner in that. So okay. He's driving. So yeah, we yeah, that's they have a stunt driver, of course. And, you know, I think the guy, it was a stunt driver from I forget his name, but he's so great. But you know, they do stunt driving for Fast and the Furious and things mm-hmm. like that. And so it was yeah, so he's doing all the crazy driving. And things like that. And mm-hmm. Liam Neeson was crazy is, you know, when he's driving, there's actually somebody on top of the car, like in a helmet and in this cage. They're really driving the car.
Oh,
and
wow.
So as the steering wheel turns, all Liam has to do is hold on to the wheel and it's moving. He just plays it. He's playing the action. But there's somebody on top, sitting on the roof of the car.
Crazy.
Driving crazy. And you just have to trust.
I know. That is.
And I've never seen that before.
Oh, my
that
gosh. Because I would be like, oh, no, I accidentally grab it too hard. I'd be like, oh, no,
yeah.
Oh, no.
Whole body moving. Yeah,
that's
no.
What you're driving for real.
Everybody wanting to get on top of that car.
No.
And see what that feels like to drive a car on top of a car.
They are fearless. Right. I yeah. couldn't do it.
Yeah. So it was just great. A lot of fun things to see.
And then what is has been your favorite TV show or movie to work on? You've worked on so much.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, it's... I've had so many. I mean, there's been some great independent films I love working on. I had this film called The American Dream. It was just a super indie film that me and my that was written by Jamil Walker Smith, a good friend of mine. That was great. I did a film with Paul Walker called The Lazarus Project, which I'm always proud of that because mm-hmm. we just had a great vibe and chemistry. May he rest in peace, mm-hmm. you know, on that set. And you know, to play this mentally challenged character, I really, really, really enjoyed that. And gosh, there's been so many great TV.
There have been.
I tell you one that was. I definitely had a great experience when I worked on. I'm a big M. Night Shyamalan fan, and I got to work with them on Wayward Pines, mm-hmm. which comes out I think mid March.
Yeah.
So when I got that part in the pilot. I didn't know he was directing it. I didn't know until I got on set. And I'm
I
like,
thought he just produced it, so he's directing it as well.
Yeah, he directed the pilot.
Wow.
So I get on set. And usually, I've met tons of celebrities. I'm always cool. I'm not really, I don't really get starstruck like that. There's a few people that can get me. They're like, oh, snap.
Yeah.
And then, but he was one. And I was like, oh my God. Yeah. Like, I just gotta give you your props so I can act regular.
Right.
Yeah.
And, cause I watched, I used to watch all of his movies. Mm-hmm. Special features, DVDs, I watch everything, and I just thought that he was just so gracious in terms of giving the right information for aspiring mm-hmm. filmmakers on those things. So I apply them to myself. So, but that was a great experience to work with M. Night Shyamalan on that. It was incredible.
My goodness, you've done so much.
Yes, you do everything.
Right. So you've been in every genre there's ever been. What do you still have left to accomplish? Like, what's something that you go, that's a project I haven't tackled. I would like to do that.
That's a good question. Maybe. Because horror, I still haven't done a horror movie. You know, although because you know, even I haven't done horror yet.
No, black people get killed first. Don't
yeah,
do it.
Don't do it.
You're not gonna have a lot of scenes.
You gotta have a couple black people,
right, right.
And then one more guy.
If there's one more guy, then you might live a little longer.
Yeah.
So a horror movie, okay. So
yeah,
we gotta
it's
get
a
major
horror.
Movie.
We do a horror, yeah.
So then you're also a producer and director, mm-hmm. and you've got some other projects, Past the Light and Construction, right?
Yeah, Past the Light and Construction.
Talk about those. What is that?
Yeah, Past the Light is an inspirational family film. It's a film that written by my partner Victor Hawks, and it's a feel good film about a 17-year-old kid who's running for Congress, you know, mm-hmm. in order to bring his community together. and just promote a message of love and positivity and us working together as one in order to mm-hmm. achieve it. So it's just a great feel good film. We took all around the country, standing ovations everywhere, and the other one is Construction, which is a romantic comedy slash musical, and also ran by Victor Hawks. You know, he was a big Broadway actor, so it stars him, and that film comes out at the end of the year.
Awesome. And then what other upcoming projects do you have going on?
I have a film coming out called Lucky Number, which stars Tom Pelfrey, Joey Russo, Natalie Hall, Method Man. Okay. And we shot that in New York City. And actually, it's premiering at the Soho Film Festival, I believe, May 16th.
Oh,
if I got that
best.
Date wrong, you can look up Soho Film Festival if I got it wrong. But I believe it's May 16th. But that's a fun, super fun comedy. Brendan Murphy's director of it, and so that comes out May 16th in the film festivals before it hits the theaters.
You are everywhere.
Yeah, it's you know what? It doesn't seem like. Yeah, I try to stay busy. I try to stay busy. Yeah.
How do you keep that energy up? Like, is there? Do you work out? Do you have a fitness regimen? Like, what do you do to keep your energy going?
You know, I do it. I love it. You know, I really hold on to that moment when I was on stage as a little kid. You know, when I didn't have my own responsibility was to go to school and get good grades. You know, I didn't have the responsibility of family and taking care of this, that, and the third. And you didn't have any of those responsibilities. I did it for fun. Mm-hmm. And there was a period where it wasn't about the fun. It was about something else, you know. But I got back to that. You know, I was able to find my place, find my way back to that during the American Gangster years, and it kind of kept on going from there. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't feel like work to me.
Okay.
You know, because I'm doing, you know, like they say, if you do what you love, you never have to work a day in your life.
Exactly.
And I'm like, that's so true. So, like sometimes I don't even know how busy I am. I'm talking, I'm like, yeah, I did that too. But it's just trying to stay active, you know.
But then with you being so busy, do you have time for relationships and family? Are you in a relationship?
Yeah, I'm married. Yeah.
How long have you been married?
Yeah, I've been married for 8 years.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So how do you balance the family and then doing all these millions of projects that you do?
It's easy, you know. My wife is my partner in crime. Mm-hmm. You know, she's also in production too, and we went to theater school together. And now she works behind the camera, and so she gets it. She understands it. And obviously, there's that period of time learning how to balance, you know, being away and traveling, and maintaining our relationship and keeping it strong and going. And we just learned, stay open, stay available, stay honest with one another. And we found a way to make it work for ourselves. And it's our way, you know,
our way
may not work for somebody else,
but it
works for us.
That's good.
And we're happy with it.
Would you want your kids to do acting in theater, TV, film? Would you want them to be in the same industry as you guys?
You know, I don't have a problem with that. There was a time when I was younger, I thought I would. And that's before I knew as much as I did about the business. You know, you think about young actors coming up, and all they do, you know, at least in the tabloids, they promote the actors that have gone south, you know, that have done the bad things. Mm-hmm. That's five of them. That's five of thousands of young actors. And those thousands are doing just fine.
Right.
And that five is not a reflection of these other young actors. Mm-hmm. You know, I've worked with so many, especially during Pass the Light, were great parents, you know. They don't got these stage moms and dads that's driving them crazy, but they'll never make the tabloids, you know. They'll never make the tabloids, you know. As soon as somebody goes, you know, careers go south or start doing some bad stuff, you hear all about it, and then that's a reflection on everybody else. And unfortunately, you know, that's how things work in the media and our society. Everybody focuses on that negative, and it has to be, oh, that's everybody now.
Right.
And it's not. You know,
right.
So I don't mind. So my answer is, I wouldn't mind now that I know what I know. Absolutely. If it makes them happy, if they enjoy it, if they're having fun with it, absolutely they can actually be in this business, and they'll be okay because I'm their daddy, so they don't got to worry about any craziness.
good.
And if they're gonna be, if they're your kid, they're gonna have so much talent. Mm-hmm. They're gonna be busy.
Yeah. Every parent, you want to open your, you want to give your, you know, your children the best opportunities. Right. Give them opportunity. Mm-hmm. And so hopefully I will be able to do that.
And before we get out of here, where can all of your fans find you on social media or online?
Yeah, I'm at Malcolm J Goodwin on Instagram. Malcolm J Goodwin on Twitter.
Okay, all around.
Yeah, all around. So, yeah, and I try to stay as active as I can on the social media. I'm getting better.
You have to be staying there.
My castmate, Raul Coley, they're so good at it, so I'm getting better.
Good.
Where can we find you, Courtney?
You guys can keep in touch with me at Tez Knows on Twitter and Instagram. Be sure to use the hashtag BHLNext and let us know what you thought about this episode.
And as always, you can find me, Megan Thomas, on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Meg Scoop, like scoop of ice cream. Don't forget to check out Malcolm Goodwin every Tuesday on CW's iZombie 98 Central. Also, you can see him at Run All Night with all film theaters everywhere.
Everywhere. You
basically
can find him everywhere.
Turn on your TV, open your eyes,
and
look
he's
on
there.
A billboard or a trailer on the side of a bus, something. Malcolm is there. Okay.
Right.
Just check him out. We'll see you next week, y'all.
All right,
bye.
You guys.
From producers Maria Menounos, Dario Kristen, Tiana Hobson, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire BHL crew, we would like to thank you for supporting Black Hollywood Live, the first online broadcast network dedicated to African-American entertainment. For questions and comments, contact us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. Like us on Facebook, tweet us, or Instagram us at BHL Online. And I'm your BHL announcer, Scipio. Instagram me at Planet Scipio. Thank you for tuning in.
Hollywood Redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.